Invaluable intelligence, short and sweet. eMarketer's Chart of the Day newsletter delivers one insightful chart each day to help you better understand trends across marketing, media, advertising, commerce, technology, finance, and more. Each edition also includes suggestions on how you can use these charts in presentations and pitch decks. Visit insiderintelligence.com/chart of the day and sign up today.
When there are features or capabilities that are available via digital app that are unique and differentiating for certain banks, it can grow in importance. But in a world where kind of everyone's got more or less similar digital capabilities, everyone's got the table stakes, it doesn't drive as much of the decision-making of consumers. Consumers almost assume that every bank's got everything they need on the digital app.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Banking and Payments Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer. Today is November 14th. I'm Rob Rubin, GM of Financial Services, and your host today. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating. We'd love to hear from you. The title of today's episode, Counting on Bricks When Banks Stick to Their Branches, and it's going to be a good one. Joining me today is Andrew Hovet, director at Curinos, my former partner at Novantas before it merged into Curinos. Hey, Andrew, how are you? Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Rob. So great to see you.
It's been really fun. You know, we've worked together for a long time in the past, but our audience doesn't know you yet. So before we get into it, let me ask you a couple of quick fire questions so that the audience can get to know you a little bit better.
All right, shoot.
What I know is that you are born, raised in Louisiana, New Orleans.
Well, my wife grew up in New Orleans. I actually grew up in Seattle.
Oh, I didn't know that because you sound like you're from New Orleans.
Oh, no. I guess it's caught. We lived here for probably a dozen years before I moved to New York City to work with you, Rob, at Novantas. And I was there for about 4 years. And then the pandemic hit and my wife and I decided to pick up stakes and head back south. So I'm back in New Orleans.
I would agree, especially New York, like in the beginning of the pandemic, was not a fun place. And you had, I think, your son with you, right?
We did. I had a middle school son and I had two who were in college. Yeah. And of course, with the pandemic, then they were shipped home. So there were five of us
in a New York City apartment. That must have been fun. What was your family's favorite New York food?
We're a pizza family through and through. Not that we didn't enjoy lots of other food, but I would say pizza was always the top of the list.
Pizza is one of those things where you get it in New York, you can almost go to any corner and it's pretty good. It's really good, especially compared to other places.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of our favorites was Hit. We were living in the Upper West Side. Motorino was awesome, but also like totally different Sicilian, you know, kind of square slice from Mama's,
yeah,
too.
Uh-huh. I know that place.
And I would say my longtime favorite going back to the 90s when I first lived in New York was I was at John's Blinker.
All right.
Always. But our place in the Upper West Side, at least satisfied my boys, was, like you said, the corner spot was Little Italy.
Right.
I think one of their many.
Yeah.
But it was always good.
Little Italy was always that place you wound up for me because I live in the suburbs. I wound up because I'm waiting for the train at late at night. Well, that was fun, but we have a lot to cover, so let's get right to the headlines. In the headlines, we chat about a top story as it relates to our episode. For today, I picked two articles, one from American Banker titled Why Banks Are Closing So Many Branches, and one from CNBC's website titled Supermarket Bank Branches Are Closing 7 times Faster Than Other Locations. I put links in the show notes to those articles. The AB article gave some numbers on branch closings. In 2009, there were nearly 100,000 bank branches, and now there are fewer than 80,000 bank branches. The article cited the obvious factors at play. Consumers want more digital experiences, exacerbated by the pandemic, so banks are investing more in their digital experiences. And then also the M&A where banks overlap. So two banks, a bank buys another bank, they have overlapping branches, they close some of the branches. To me, it feels like M&A has a lot to do with it because I did some research and I found data from the FDIC that said that there were over 6,800 different banking institutions in 2009, and there's under 4,500 at the end of June 2023. That's more than the branch decline as a percent.
It's massive.
So there's this huge closure, but the article also cited reasons why these branches still exist. So why don't you help us understand why? And, you know, I want to point out that today, I think everybody who's listening here should know we are in what would be considered a high interest rate environment, particularly compared to the past where there was like zero interest rate or pretty close. So why are bank branches so important in today's high rate environment?
Yeah, Rob, I mean, branches are still important. They have always been kind of a tried and true mechanism for gathering what we would describe as kind of core customer relationships, right? Those everyday personal operating account. Digital banks can post a high rate and they can gather deposits, but ultimately none of them have been able to translate into that, getting that core kind of customer relationship, which is essentially a zero cost of funds for that checking account. And so in a high rate environment, having that good, stable, low cost funding is really important. And so bank branches have been able to deliver that, you know, time and again.
I think that what's sort of interesting, like I look at like Chime, you know, Chime is an interesting digital bank because their value prop is get paid 2 days early. So they're clearly targeting a mass market audience who more paycheck to paycheck and want to have their funds as early as possible. So is that a solution to not having a branch, to like come up with a trick?
Yeah, I think really important is having a differentiated value proposition. If you want to be able to get that kind of core operating account, again, if you want to compete on rate, go as high as you can go and gather deposits, obviously very expensive ones. But it's really been difficult for banks to kind of stand out from others because most consumers view the pretty much of a commodity product. They're all the same. And so innovators like Chime, who really kind of helped differentiate themselves with something unique and different. Now, there have been a lot of fast followers. A lot of the traditional banks now have the same features, but they were, if not first to market, they were probably first to really capitalize on that innovation.
It's always the first one to capitalize, but then it also, it meets a very targeted niche.
Yes.
Maybe it's a big niche, but there's only a certain segment that's going to be interested in that. One of the things that was interesting that we did is we looked at the mobile apps of the big banks and we looked at the mobile apps of some of these direct banks like Chime, for example. And what we found is the mobile apps on the big banks were significantly better and more sophisticated than the apps from these direct banks. But the direct banks, they build everything around that value prop. So Chime, get paid 2 days early. As long as the mobile app delivered the basics that consumers were expecting, what the person really wanted who signed up for the Chime account was to get paid 2 days early. So that's like a value prop. And I wonder for them, how do they extend to reach a different audience, maybe a more affluent consumer, someone that might buy other banking products?
I think it'd be very difficult. But you have other players, you know, like SoFi, who are trying to get a broader set of needs. And they really kind of came at it from a lending first perspective.
Right.
So they are trying to be kind of a digital, but kind of full service bank. They also are targeting a particular segment. I think that that's important. You know, if you're a fully digital, you can chase a segment. If you are constrained by your physical presence, it's harder to chase after an individual segment. You almost have to serve the whole community in order to be able to get the scale out of the market. So,
yeah. And you look at like Discover is offering a cash back debit card to try to win some deposits.
Right. Absolutely.
I want to jump to the second article. The CNBC article talked about supermarket branches closing at a much faster pace than other footprints. And they cited the difficulty selling a range of banking products at those locations compared to full service. But let's just take a step back. Why did banks start opening supermarket branches in the first place?
They tried to tap into that everyday convenience, right? And so if you were visiting the grocery store once or even more than once a week, made it very easy for you to stop by and do your banking services. And so that convenience was really important back in the day. Supermarket branches actually, if you look at it on a new customer acquisition basis, performed just as well as traditional banks as gathering those new relationships.
Okay.
The challenge is they had difficulty getting kind of deeper relationships, getting into lending, into mortgage, into investments out of those locations. It was a little harder to get someone to sit down and talk to you about their kind of complex financial needs. But it was not so bad to open a checking account and have the convenience of whatever kind of cash services or
low-cost deposits. Why would they pull that out if they can open a checking account and get someone to put their direct deposit in?
I think what's changed over time is the importance of that convenience has declined. So customers don't visit the branch nearly as frequently as they can do most of their banking on a digital app or maybe at the ATM. And so kind of the value to the customer was a little bit lower. And the other thing is those branches typically tended to attract a little bit more of a mass market customers. And with kind of a lot of the OD NSF reform over the last few years, those mass market relationships are a little less profitable for the banks than before. And so
because they can't charge the big overdraft fees.
Exactly.
Sweet. That is probably a good time to transition. You know, while banks have been shuttering branches for a while, physical network planning in a digital world is certainly much more nuanced about how they would do that. And in a high rate environment, the need for sort of lower cost retail deposits from consumers and small businesses has to change the calculus for what branches you keep and what branches you don't. So let's dig deeper into that in Story by Numbers. In Story by Numbers, we pick a number or two that helps us dig into the episode's topic. Today, for Story by Numbers, I want to talk about two charts that you showed in a recent Curinos webinar titled Network Optimization in a High Rate Environment. There's a link in the show notes. The first chart's title, Primary Checking Acquisition Drivers, changes over time, and it shows some pretty interesting trends. In 2015, branch share accounted for 58% of new primary accounts, and it declined to 36% in 2022. Maybe you can just real high level explain what you mean by branch share.
Absolutely. What we're essentially looking at there, this analysis was done looking market by market and essentially trying to understand who customers were choosing in a market to change their primary bank relationship. And branch share essentially there is your percentage of branches in a given market, right? So a kind of dominant share provider might have 12 to 15% of the branches in a market. Maybe some of the national banks will often have that in some of their markets. Whereas right. A more typical regional bank may have more like 6 to 8% of branch share, but essentially it's your share of the storefronts in the market.
So what we see then is that the value of having a big network in a market has declined. That's basically what those numbers say. It declined from 58% contribution to a 36% contribution.
Yes. In a world where convenience matters more, and I'm going to the branch, you know, semi-frequently, right? I need to have a lot of branches that are convenient to me, part of my kind of live, work, play patterns, right? In a world where I don't go nearly as frequently, I just need to know that there are branches available, right? I don't necessarily need to have tons of branches available. And I think the flip is, some of that is branch becoming more important, but the other part of it is the brand and marketing becoming so much more important. In a world of everything is really consumer brand driven these days, right? Think beyond banking and think how important kind of branding has become. We're really seeing that in banking as well, where brands that are able, like you mentioned earlier about the example of Chime, who are able to differentiate themselves, what is it about their brand that is unique and distinctive? And then putting marketing heft behind it to make sure people know about it, right? Those two factors working together have increased in importance while having lots and lots and lots of branches has decreased.
And are there other factors of influence that grew or declined?
Really interesting thing. Another thing that we've measured as part of this is trying to understand from the consumer's perspective, the importance of what we describe as kind of leading digital capabilities.
Okay.
And what we've seen, especially in the 2022 research, and we're actually going into field again or right now to update for 2023, but what we saw in 2022 is that the importance of leading digital capabilities declined to be relatively small. And it's a little surprising in a world that is so digital, but I think the way we've observed this is we've done this research year over year, what we've seen is there are some years digital increased in importance and then other times it receded. And what we're really seeing is when there are features or capabilities that are available via digital app that are unique and differentiating for certain banks, it can grow in importance. But in a world where kind of everyone's got more or less similar digital capabilities, everyone's got the table stakes, it doesn't drive as much of the decision-making of consumers. Consumers almost assume that every bank's got everything they need on the digital app.
Right. I hear you. One of the interesting things in that chart to me was that it showed how the influence of marketing, as you pointed out, and branding is more and more important. But one of the things that we've talked about in this podcast and that we publish is that banks over the last couple of years, they've reduced their marketing budgets overall. And a lot of the cuts, not all of them, by the way, some have doubled down, but a lot of the banks, particularly like the regional banks and the smaller banks, they've actually cut largely from the top of funnel, the stuff that they can't attribute.
Yeah.
They pay for the performance stuff. So it seems like you're saying that marketing and branding has increased in influence. But what we see is that banks are deciding that's what they're going to cut today.
Exactly. And I think what you start to get there is you're differentiating between ultimately winners and losers, especially in a world where if you are closing some of your bank branches, right, you're decreasing your ability to attract new customers. You've got to offset that. And really, because of marketing being such an important driver, you need to feed some up there. The other thing that a bank branch network does is it's an unbelievable marketing capability, right? You have lots of signs throughout the city that say, "We're here, we're open for business," right? And so as you decrease your physical presence, you're reducing that, what we describe kind of as unaided awareness. And you need to make sure you're offsetting that with that top of funnel kind of brand marketing.
Right. Didn't Novantas call that the billboard value of a branch?
We do. We still call it the billboard value.
It is, right? I want to jump to keep on time to the second chart because it's really fascinating. And I'm a data person. That's why I think it is. But I think people listening will find it too. It looks at the value of closing a branch in terms of savings on operating expenses. And it compares if you close a branch when the rate environment is low versus today when you have a high rate environment. And the thing that you've pointed out is that we're going to be in a high rate environment. It's not going to go back down anytime soon. It's going to be here for a bit. So the chart analyzes the operating expense savings if you close a branch, because branches are quite expensive to operate, against the consequences of closing the branch. So you close a branch, you save some money, right? You save a lot of money, but you also have customers that might be upset that you just closed that branch. You also don't acquire any new customers from that branch anymore. So what the chart showed was that in a low rate environment, the negative consequences of closing the branch are about 47% of what they'll actually save by closing it. So they benefit 53% to close the branch is what it sort of says. But then in a high rate environment, it jumps to 95% of the savings. In other words, the negative consequences consume 95% of what you save. And that seems a little close to not making any money. So it could cost you more to close a branch than to keep it open in some cases. So maybe you can discuss that. Yeah. Why is that?
Absolutely. And you know, if you think about the world we're in right now, where everyone is deposit constrained, right? Everybody needs deposits. And as we've described, bank branches are good at attracting that kind of low cost, stable, you know, kind of core checking relationships. And so when you close a branch, you know, yes, you get a little bit of hit of attrition of customers who choose to bank elsewhere, but a lot of customers would be happy to continue to bank with you at one of your other physical locations. What you really miss out on is, to your point, is that future sale. Every year, there's a new tranche of customers that you're no longer attracting to the bank.
Right.
And those customers were going to give you kind of those kind of core deposits, those lower cost deposits. In a high rate environment where you're deposit constrained, you need to go replace those kind of foregone deposits, right?
Because it would be too expensive to buy the money.
Essentially, you have to buy the money because you need the deposits,
right?
To continue to fund the bank. And so you're now trading off, you know, missing out on those kind of core customers with low cost. You're going to have to go out at kind of wholesale funds or rate driven deposits at 5%+. And so now that you're trading off having to go quote unquote buy those deposits relative to the operating cost you save. And so what looked like an easy decision in a lower rate environment might actually be a bad decision. Now, it doesn't mean you can't close branches. It just needs to be really surgical about understanding which ones you're going to close and what's the impact. And can you offset some of that foregone sales by maybe spending marketing to make sure you continue that kind of core customer growth?
You just created the best transition to our next segment, because I just want to cover off, because we covered a lot in Story by Numbers, and we discussed that brand share has had less influence than it used to have and why that is. But one thing we didn't say, which I just want to mention as we walk away, is it still accounts for 36%. It's like, that's still big. So branches are still super important in that regard, even though their influence has gone down. But I thought it was sort of interesting that marketing budgets have declined, yet the influence of marketing and branding has increased. And some of the big banks, unfortunately for the regional banks, they know that. And they are dropping tons and tons of money into marketing. I think maybe Bank of America's flat, but I know Chase has increased its marketing budget significantly. So that's just the way that is. So I think that this is a great time to think about a regional bank and move to our final segment today, Pretend CEO. And in Pretend CEO, we are going to pretend that Andrew is the CEO of a regional bank, and his team is tasked with optimizing its deposit portfolio given the high rate environment and their branch network. So this is a good one for you, Andrew. At the highest level, what's the strategy that you would have if you're the CEO of a regional bank and figuring out how to do all of that you've just said?
Well, Rob, first off, thanks for the promotion. Very excited about the new role.
You are right now.
Ultimately, we really think about these strategies as really kind of market-based strategies. So you need to think about your different markets in which you operate, because there are differences between them. There are typically differences in the scale of branches that you have, right? What's your kind of branch share in market A versus market B, right? As well as the competitive mix that's going on in those markets. And so, you know, if you think about a typical regional bank, they typically have one or maybe a couple what I'd describe as kind of hometown markets, right? Which were the headquarters for one of the maybe multiple community banks that have kind of come together.
Right. M&T Bank, Buffalo.
And Baltimore, right? You know, given its legacy institutions that kind of came together. And so you typically have those hometown markets where you have a lot of branches and a lot of market share and a lot of brand awareness. And then typically what has happened is, you know, often led by the commercial business, you branched out into new markets and sometimes some larger metro markets in order to tap into the, you know, real estate lending and the C&I lending in those markets. And maybe there's a thinner branch network that's developed in those markets. So those are very different dynamics. And right. So when you're thinking about kind of the dual objectives of one, growing your customer base, right? Customer, that's the lifeblood. So you got to grow your customer base, but also growing your deposits, funding the bank, yeah. Right? And in this kind of tight deposit constrained market, that often means using rate. Thinking about which markets I could use best to continue to grow core customers, and those markets where you have higher brand awareness, higher density, your marketing dollars are going to be much more efficient. So continuing to focus on growing your core customers in some of your denser markets. And then in some of those markets where, frankly, you don't have enough density, you don't have enough branches to really compete across the full spectrum of customers, go ahead and light them up with rate, right? And the other thing that that does is it helps protect your hometown market, so you're not pricing up the back book in your hometown market.
So what you're saying is to sort of offer higher rates. That's what you would do as the CEO is I would, in markets where I'm thin, I would have a little bit more expensive deposits because I want to win the customers. And then in our hometown markets where we have all of the attributes necessary to win customers without doing a rate game, not do it.
Exactly. So you're really being thoughtful. I kind of simplified the answer, but the point is thinking really clearly market by market and what's the objective for the market. Am I thinking about core customer growth or am I thinking about more about a funding mechanism or a deposit growth, and also the efficiency or the effectiveness of my marketing spend and making sure that you're kind of balancing those investment levers appropriately.
Well, first, what about market density? Like we talked about like hometown market, a hometown market for a bank might be a kind of small metro market, and some of their thin markets might be giant metro markets. So like, what's the difference when you sort of in the calculus in a low dense market versus a high density market?
I think the key is if you realize that branches by themselves are only going to attract so many new to bank customers, and then you're going to have to layer marketing on top of that in order to drive customers in to essentially help promote whatever it is that's special or unique about your brand, you want to think about the effectiveness of that marketing. And really what we see is markets where you have relative density, where you already have higher levels of awareness, your marketing spend, your marketing efficiency is really high. In those markets where kind of nobody knows who you are, you're often kind of spitting into the wind. And we see a lot of inefficient marketing spend in some of these big metro markets where banks have limited share.
So do banks focus very carefully on like how much revenue each branch therefore brings in? How do they attribute all those other factors that we talked about in Story by Numbers, like the marketing spend, the investment in their product?
Unfortunately, I think banks hold all of their branches to a similar standard and don't always take into account the potential nuances of the different markets, right? And, you know, where I am providing marketing support or where I do have higher levels of awareness. Now, the branches often cost about the same. And frankly, even in some of the big metro markets, they may cost even more. So I don't want to say you completely ignore kind of your traditional branch profitability, but I think being really clear around what's my performance objective for my different markets and how do I measure success differently given that, right? I think it's important to think about that nuance.
Would you, as the CEO, look to sort of relocating branches and markets? We talked a little bit about billboard value. What if you're not the lead share? Maybe you're in that 6-8% range in a metro market of branch share, but your branches are old. They look like they're from the 90s.
Or the 70s.
Or the 70s. And they're not in the best locations for the environment of today or where that market has gone. Do you change locations? How do you think about that? How do you organize that?
Yeah, I think over the long haul, it's really important to be thinking about in a world where I probably ultimately need fewer locations, right? Making sure I'm getting kind of the bang for the buck from a marketing value is really important. And what we would think is it's a little bit hard to make a business case just for a straight up relocation because the capital required for that relocation is relatively expensive.
Yeah.
And so often, you know, thinking about it more like a 2-for-1 where you can take two kind of, you know, B locations and, you know, converge in a better place that gives you kind of an A location, you can make that business case often work.
Well, that was a great answer. And I would hire you as CEO if I was the chairman of the board.
Thank you, Rob.
I want to thank you, Andrew. That was all the time we had for today. And I think that in Pretend CEO, that was just such an interesting discussion about why branches are important and how you would think about a branch strategy at a market by market level. Really a wise way to work. And I think, as we talked about, banks have to really think about how they justify their marketing expense, because reducing their marketing budgets in this time, as you point out, and we've pointed out, is probably a big mistake. So thank you for today. This was so much fun to have you, and I'm gonna have you back on the show at some point in the future. So thanks for coming.
Absolutely, Rob. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and if I'm in New Orleans, I'm definitely calling you. Or New Orleans, I say it properly. I want to thank everyone for listening to the Banking and Payment Show and eMarketer podcast, and I want to thank our editor, Todd. Our next episode is on November 28th, so be sure to check it out. See you then. Bye, everyone.